Welcome to episode 2 of The Effortless Athlete. I'm Bobby White, here with Alex Kasslander. Today we have Justin Ochoa, owner and operator of Pace Fitness Academy in Westfield, Indiana. Justin started Pace in 2017 and has quickly transformed it into an elite academy where athletes across multiple sports develop strength, speed, and skill. Justin and I connected a few months ago through social media, and we've had a constant conversation since then. From tattoos to sprained ankles and training philosophies, it quickly became apparent that we have a lot in common. In today's episode, we talk about IQ versus EQ, building relationships, and what it takes to develop a culture. Let's get to it. We got Justin Ochoa here. I got one question for him to kick this off. What's the most interesting thing you're working on?
The most interesting thing I'm working on. All right. I'm going to give a twofold answer.
That's fine. Make it threefold.
It might end up being threefold by the end of this. So the first thing that came to mind when you asked me that was this book / course that I started that I never finished. I started it like probably 7 or 8 months ago, and it was called the Gen Z Playbook. And like my thing was like, all right, Generation Z, they're just different, like, but that's not a bad thing. It's primarily who I spend my time with, and coaches aren't communicating with them effectively. And then I kind of just shelved it because when we were closed and I had all this time to work on it. The gym was closed. I wasn't really training anybody. I was not as busy as I've ever been. And then we opened and it was like all just shit hit the fan. You know what I mean? Like when the country opened back up, everybody wanted to train because nobody had really been doing anything that's super, you know, reliable as far as training goes. And so I just got busy and I shelved it. So that was supposed to be a course, like an online course. Right now it's a book type thing. I don't know what will ever happen with it, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. Second thing is I'm really trying to turn something like this podcast into a conference. So where coaches that are not like, so by the books, we think outside the box, we do things based on experience. We do things based on like gut feeling. We do things without scientific research backing it in that moment. And then we experiment with it and we usually find that it works. And if we don't find that it works, then we throw it out and try something else. I'm trying to find enough people. And we've kind of talked about this behind the scenes, like, you know, a speaking lineup of 6-7 people where we can all get like-minded individuals in the same room and talk about what we talk about in the DMs on a grander scale and really have other coaches who maybe want to learn from people like us and, you know, get them in the same room as well and see how we can all learn from each other and grow. So that's the two things that I would say the most interesting things I'm working on right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. About like even connecting to the Gen Z stuff, like if I can't connect with a kid on an emotional level or a soul level, right? I don't care about how good of an athlete he is. I say it all the time, and I'm probably going to say it on this podcast every single episode I record it. I don't care if he has a 40-inch vert if that kid wakes up and he hates what he sees in the mirror. Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. That has to come first. And our ability to communicate to them, understanding what it's like in 2020 and given the circumstances now with all the racial tension, with all the COVID stuff, with all the things we have going on, with the amount of crap being strewn at them through social media. And I mean, they're home all day now. They're going to school remotely. They're on their phones. They're on TikTok. They're on this. They're comparing themselves to people without even realizing it. Like their subconscious is overwhelmed right now. And I don't even think they really realize it. Some of them do. But like, for us, I'm 32 years old. I think you're 31 years old. You know, we're not too far removed from it, that we have a step up on, let's say, maybe older coaches that aren't in tune with the culture, what it is now in 2020. And that is like, I think I'm a phenomenal trainer. I believe that today. I've been doing this for a long time and I've done my best for a long time. But I think what my greatest asset is, what my greatest gift to these children, because that's what they are, they're human being children, right? Well, is that I understand that they're children, that they need guidance. Everything is now is like, go with your gut. What if your gut tells you not to get out of bed in the morning? Because there's days I wake up that I don't want to get out of bed, that I don't want to work out, that I don't like what I see in the mirror. What if my gut, you want me to go with that? No, I need some guidance. I'm 32 and I have a network of men that have, you know, that have served our country or that have been through battle, the emotional battles, that have been through all different types of things and have succeeded and overcome that, that I lean on. And I try to be that person for my kids, for my human athletes that I know, whether they admit it or not, are all going through something. I follow, you know, Kevin Love's whole thing now with the mental health awareness world, everybody's going through something, right? And it's so true. And I think that's unbelievable what you're doing. And then even to tie that into this conference, it's all one. Like we're treating, we're training, we're doing this, but if you have the 40-inch vert, but you don't have the right mindset, or if you have the jump shot, but you don't have the soul, the passion, the whatever, right? We're missing something. You know, you need both. You need it all.
You gotta have both. Like you said, none of that matters, because eventually the day will come where the ball stops bouncing, or you know, you can't run a touchdown, or you can't, you know, hit a home run. Like, sports will end. It doesn't matter if you are the best player on the planet. Like, sports will end for you, and you're going to have to go remove yourself from this world where, you know, it's a different world when you're quote unquote, like, just a person, you're not an athlete, right? You grow up in this athletic scene and things are, you know, it's a subculture and things are different, and that's fine. But you also have to be comfortable with yourself and confident in yourself to go interview for a job, or to go, you know, meet your girlfriend's parents for the first time, or to just navigate through, you know, daily interactions with, you know, police officers, people who are rude to you, like shit like that. You know, not everything deserves a reaction. You have to kind of, I just don't know, man. Like, it was something I felt, like I said, that I was excelling at as a coach, and something that I felt, and then something that also, like, people had told me, like, hey, you're really good at this aspect of coaching. Like, you know, little Johnny really connects with you on a better level than any other coach he's had. And I don't even need that to know. I don't need that, because I get it from the kid, because we communicate and we talk about 90% of the things we talk about are not about anything we're doing in the gym. You know what I'm saying? Or anything, basketball, football, whatever, whoever I'm training, mostly basketball, but it's really about life. Like, we talk about, oh, what's the best place in town to get wings? Like, what'd you do this weekend? Have you seen this new movie? Did you get the new Jordan release? Like, shit that really matters to them aside from basketball, because basketball is not their identity. Like you said, they're children. They're humans that just happen to be competing in a sport.
Yeah. A mentor of mine once told me, the more you know about somebody, the more you can help them. And it stuck with me. I don't know if he told me it 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I think I was about to have a high level, you know, D1 guy walk in the gym or something. And I called him, and he's a business finance guy. And I was like, you know, I want to help this kid so much. I know I can help him. He's like, what should I do? He's like, ask him questions about himself. Find out as much as you can about him, right? Learn who he is, learn what makes him tick, learn what motivates him. And now I've even developed games to that I play with players, that it's writing down information on who they are, and I categorize it somewhere in my crazy mind, but I can tell, like, any kid that walks into my gym right now, if you tested me, I could tell you more about their life than, like, it's a little scary, honestly, about how much I care. Like, I genuinely care so much for these kids, and I genuinely want what's best for them. And there's so I see so many people that say it where it's almost just like lip service, where it's just, you know, I care about my, no, I care about my athletes. I want to see them succeed. I want them, you know, whatever their goals are, I want them to like go freaking past them, you know? Yeah. And I don't, you can't fake that. And that's, they feel that. And there's a reason we'll have, you know, an hour training session, but a lot of my kids, it's hard now with COVID, but kids will hang out at our gym for 4 or 5 hours. You know, they'll bring snacks and they'll just hang out. And, you know, we've created a culture and we've created a home. And yeah, I really believe in the training that we offer and the services we offer, because I read, as much as I read leadership and entrepreneurial books and the all the different scripture that I read and all the different things that I do, right? That's like, I don't know. It's really cool. And it's awesome to talk to guys like you that are on the same page with that.
Yeah, Justin, I actually listened to one of your podcast shorts. I think you call them the Gem episodes, or was it the Gem Z episodes? And you talk about the difference between IQ and EQ, right? And you talk about just the importance of that, of building that culture where IQ is, you know, your basic intelligence, and then EQ is your emotional intelligence, yeah. Right? Your ability to kind of connect with people, whether they're, you know, whatever the relationship is. Can you touch base on that real quick? Just kind of explain the difference and how you've kind of cultivated that EQ as a trainer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the first thing is empathy, you know, just having like compassion for others. And that, like, for me personally, that's not something that I can honestly 100% tell you that I had my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, there are some points in my life where I look back and I'm just like, damn, bro, you were an asshole in this phase of your life. So it partially that those years where I wasn't the person that I wanted to be probably helped me become, you know, a better person, just by seeing how, you know, when you treat people like shit, it'll come back to you, and it'll come back to you worse than you gave it out. So like I had tons of highs and lows growing up, and that probably helped develop, you know, the compassion and empathy and just general EQ that I have today. The other part is just working on it, you know, and like Bobby said, you know, actively making it an exercise to learn more about others. Like, we're in a relationship service-based industry. And so, you know, the service is training. Everybody knows that. But anybody can train. Like, I mean, let's just be real. Anybody can train. It's not super hard to learn. It's definitely not super hard to get certified. But it's the relationship part that I think sets you apart. And that's why I call it a relationship service-based industry.
Yeah. So I have, like you said, you've been through some things. I've been through some things. You know, I've been through a lot of things, right? And what I found is, whether it's that introverted kid or kid that talks a lot, I can completely change the relationship in a couple minutes by divulging more of myself to them. You know, I open up and I say, you know, 8 years ago, I was a heroin addict, or I stole from my family, or I was in jail. I've been in a psych ward. I've done this. And not that I flaunt that or try to push it on them, but that's who I am today. And like you said, I'm grateful for everything I've been through, because it developed that sense of empathy in me that I understand that they're going through things, and that I have no problem opening up about the things that I've been through because I've gotten through them. Right. Exactly. Right. I still go through things today, but any of my problems today, we call them Cadillac problems. I got world-class problems today. You know, the stuff I complain about, I have, if I catch myself complaining, or my wife or Alex, I have no right to complain about anything in my life. I have a freaking house. You know, I should be buried underneath the house, right? Right. If I got what I deserved, I should be dead, right? So when I open up though, and I share about what I've been through and where I am today, I mean, I was bottom of the barrel, and now I run a business. Now people pay me to train their kids. I have keys to a gym. I have a wife. I have a trainer that I employ. Like, are you out of your freaking mind? I would have robbed you and then helped you look for the money.
Right.
You know, that's, I would have, I was a sick human being. But because I've been through all that, because I've done the work, because I've completely changed the people in my network, the way that I live, I mean, I have a therapist. I read every morning. But this is years in the making to be the person that is sitting you across from this computer screen right now, right? Yeah. But when I open up, long story short, now that I already told a long story, but when I open up, when I tell them who I am, I see them start to be able to open up and tell me who they are. And once we start to get to some soul level stuff, once we can talk Jordans, we can talk wings, we can talk all that, but they know that, I showed them a part of my soul. And then once I start getting into those deeper conversations, you talked about having like an NBA pre-draft or one of those things, getting somebody ready for a combine. If I were to do that now, I did it a couple of years ago. If I were to do another one now, I would hold myself to such a high standard that I would want to go in there. And even if I had one day with the guy, I would tell myself that I want to have a generational impact on his life, right? Give me a guy. And if I had an hour with him, give me that hour and I'm going to try to have a generational impact on his life, right? Not to serve my ego, but because I think I can really help this kid or this man or this woman. I can help them this much that give me an hour. And you know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to say, hey, my name is Bobby, and I'm going to have a generational impact on your life because I'm that confident that I can do it. I don't know where I got this confidence. I don't know how it's happened, right? But I don't care who it is. If I look somebody in the face and I say, I want to have a generational impact, what's a generational impact? He might say. I say, when you're a great grandfather and you're talking to your great grandkids and they ask you how you got to where you were, now that you're an NBA all-star, now that you're a Hall of Famer, now that you're writing books, now that everybody knows you when you walk the street, how did you get there? I want you to say, I met this crazy dude named Bobby White for an NBA free draft. And he completely changed the way that's what I want to do. That I'm not saying I am that person all the time, because I'm not. I'm not saying that will work 100% of the time, because it won't, but that's my goal. And when I walk into meeting somebody with that goal, that extreme level, like I want this guy to be a great grandfather someday, telling his great grandkid about me. It's not because I'm egotistical. It's because I want to help him that much. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I have to be careful with like ego things, because I can go way too far into ego sometimes, but I think like stuff like that, I believe that that's coming from a genuine place of service and gratitude for like how much I've learned over the years.
So you talked about relativity, and you and I spoke a little bit yesterday about how you got into training and where you started. And you said it was after, kind of a failed basketball career on your own. Right. And that's a relative tragedy for a lot of us, when you dedicate all those years, all your life to a sport or a game, and then it comes to an end, which it inevitably does for everyone, right? That feels like a relative tragedy for some of us. And I think a lot of trainers and coaches get into the game once their careers end, once they're done playing. So can you tell us a little bit about just where you started as a trainer and kind of what your motivation or inspiration was and any mentors you may have had?
Yeah, for sure. So like you said, failed athlete, went through the whole AAU circuit, went through high school, had a decent career, but ultimately I wasn't good enough to play at the next level. I wasn't mature enough. I didn't take anything seriously. I entertained some D2, D3, JUCO stuff. But it just wasn't, it didn't click. And I just, looking back, don't think that I was ready as a person to take on something like college basketball. So I ended up, I was actually enrolled during the summer at a different school, did their basketball stuff, decided it wasn't for me, go to Ball State. And Ball State is like known for sports and parties, basically. It's in the middle of Indiana. It's in the middle of nowhere. So I go and I'm like so arrogant that I schedule my class load with the basketball team, like I'm going to walk on, and literally did not pick up a basketball for like 6 months after that. And so here I am in college, just in denial, you know what I mean? Like when you're done playing,
Yeah.
There's that phase where you're like, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And who am I? Like, and that was a struggle for me. And so there was about a year or two of me just in college, you know, just doing whatever, just doing college stuff, just not really living with any purpose. And then I started to miss basketball. And so as I started to play again and you know, work out again and just really like go through that process, I started missing it. And I started trying to figure out how I could get back around it. And obviously, like by that time, you're not going to go back to playing, mm-hmm. especially not at D1. But that's when I discovered kind of like strength conditioning and that whole industry. So I was, I think, a junior at the time, beginning my junior year. I was majoring in telecommunications, which like I thought I was going to talk about sports. That was kind of like my idea. Okay, if I can't play sports, I'll talk about it. But I ended up hating that too, you know. So at that point, it was, you know, change your major to exercise science and go that route. I entertained that idea. And then, you know, it's just like, I just want to get out of college and just start doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up just graduating. I graduated from there in 4 years, took a job in media as soon as I got out. But during those last 2 years, I was basically self-educating, getting certifications, you know, reading books, reading blogs, reading guys like Eric Cressy, Mike Robertson, Mike Boyle, Joe Kinn, you know, Joe DeFranco, you know, all of those guys. I mean, this is what, 2009, 2010 at the time. So reading T Nation, reading Stack, like Breaking Muscle, all the stuff that was popping back in 2010, and just educating myself and trying to figure out, like, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And so I just followed it. And I worked during the day. I worked a 9-to-5 for a year after college while I was training on the side before and after work. I got enough clients that during that time that I was able to quit the full-time gig. And I was working at a radio station at the time and quit that and started my training career. And this was like 2012-13. So long story short, I go to a gym. It's like a commercial gym. It's like a boutique style commercial gym. So it wasn't like super big, but it wasn't like personal training based. It was definitely like, hey, you're another number membership type vibe. And it was a completely adult fitness based gym. So I'm training CEOs, stay-at-home moms, and people looking to lose weight. So it's not really, it was a part of my vision. Like, obviously you have to train people. You can't just jump straight to pro athletes and have them trust you with their bodies. But I really enjoyed that time because it helped me figure out how to communicate better with, you know, all different kinds of people. I truly believe that, you know, that was a really, really beneficial period of time. Even though I wasn't training athletes, I was still getting good training experience. And it's not like the training is that much different. It's just communication. So long story short, I developed a sports performance sector of that gym, you know, out of thin air, basically. And it got to a point where my vision, I had a vision of what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. And the gym owner and I were just not on the same page. So I decided to leave there in 2016 to start Pace with my partner, my business partner. And we wasted about a year of our lives during the planning stage, just not knowing, you know, the ins and outs of business. So long story short, went through a bunch of stuff to get the gym open. Opened the gym in 2017 after about a year of just like planning and going through and failing and not getting approved for this and that and coding or not coding, but zoning and all that stuff. And then 2017, we open, we rock it for 3 good years, like 3 really good years, outgrow it. And now we're in a space where we went from about 3,000 square feet to about 40,000 square feet. Wow. Bigger weight room, more field space. We partnered with a company that was already existing that had a phenomenal facility that was looking for, you know, people that do what we do. And we made it happen. And so now we're a part of something bigger. We have tons of resources. It's still us. It's still our brand. It's still our culture. But we just have a team behind us that's seeing the vision, and they helped us grow to this humongous facility, which was, you know, absolutely terrifying, but it's working, and it's been, we're actually going on one month in the new facility now. So that's where we're at, man. That's kind of the condensed version. There's tons of ups and downs along the way, but as far as me becoming a trainer, yeah, failed athlete, missed it. How can I get back to it? And then just started perfecting my craft and really trying to be the best coach, you know, mentor that I can be to the young athletes and the older athletes that I work with.
Yeah, that's great, man. I know, you know, we want to get into some of the actual training techniques and the methodologies and everything you're doing right now with your athletes. But real quick, I know Bobby can speak on this better than I can, but tell us about that transition going from, you know, just a regular trainer at a gym, you know, working with adults, and then kind of transitioning over to younger athletes, but then starting your own business, right? Becoming a gym owner, right? Wearing those two hats, and what that process was like, and how you went from, you know, just training out of a gym that you didn't own to now, okay, you got to worry about every little detail about the gym, from, you know, the music played and memberships and like you said, handling zoning and all that stuff. What's that process like, and what advice do you have for anyone who's kind of looking to make that transition?
Yeah, it's,
it's
tough, man. It is tough. It is a really, really tough process. And, you know, going back, like the first gym that I worked at, again, I'm training adults and, mm-hmm. you know, general fitness population. But those people became my first leads to youth athletes, because again, training is training and results are results. So you help, you know, Susie from accounting lose 20 pounds for her wedding. Oh, she has a daughter who's a soccer player. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to get in, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you just do your best work, no matter who it is. It's not who you train. It's how you train. It's the results are results, and, you know, connecting with people and helping them feel better about themselves, whether it's performance or health or whatever the case is, that really means something. And so, the transition from gen pop, I guess you would call it, to athletes kind of happened naturally, because I was training those young athletes' parents and or coaches and you know, or neighbors and stuff like that. So it eventually started as a little trickle down effect. Then I started, you know, getting full teams and club sports teams, and then really started to grow really, really fast, you know, from like two or three here to there to like 100 a week type stuff. Wow. So and that was always my plan, but I just knew, you know, you have to learn, you have to go through the process no matter what industry you're going into. Like, there is a process. And when you do things your way, you know, I didn't have a traditional internship or a GA position. I'm not in somebody's coaching tree. Mm-hmm. Like, when you do stuff on your solo journey, like, you just, sometimes you just have to grind it out and make it happen. So, when I decided, you know, I wanted to start the gym and start my own business, again, I have a business partner, Eric, he's in the trenches with me every day. He was in a similar position, almost identical. His athletic career is way better than mine, but he actually played at the NFL level. And then similar to me, you know, had that period where you just kind of resent the sport because you weren't good enough at it, when all along it was like really your fault, but you know, he went out after his NFL career ended after a year or two, became an engineer for AT&T for 15 years and like didn't watch football. And then like something snapped one day. He's a little bit older than me. And we met through my father-in-law, and he was training people at the time and in a similar position that I was, not happy where he was, wanted a vision. We shared that vision, and we just kept having lunch and talking about it. And, you know, now we're like, you know, we were not friends when we met. We weren't friends when we became business partners. And I think that's why we have such a good business, because he's not scared to call me out. I'm not scared to call him out. We do what's best for the business. He's not my best friend that I went into business with because we're boys. It's a business relationship. And obviously we're close now. He's a great friend and a mentor, but you know, we keep business. And I think my, you know, number one takeaway from the whole process is that when you start a business, you know, and you're in charge of everything from the music play to the type of cleaning solution you use on the equipment and floors to the, you know, what the thermostat should be on overnight to, you know, all the little stuff. You got to keep business. And that is a really hard thing that I struggle with every single day, because I would train every single person for free if I could. And that's not how you run a successful business.
And you'd be homeless.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be homeless and I'd be living in my parents' basement. You know what I'm saying? So, and with my family, if I still had one at that point. So it's like, you have to keep business. You have to think with a different mindset, and it's not greedy and it's not selfish and it's not all the things we previously talked about. Like, obviously you're still compassionate for others and there's empathy and you want to communicate and connect and all that, you know, that takes precedent. But if you are going to run a business, it has to be a business. Yeah. Or it's so not.
With that, like, we talked about transferring from like being failed athletes to trainers to now business owners. I can compete over anything. Like, I don't care what game we're playing, what we're doing. If there's a way to compete and announce a winner and loser at the end of it, right, I'm going to compete over it. And I've transferred my competitive nature from the court, from the weight room, from just being a guy, whatever it is, to now in business, where not that I necessarily look at other gyms and trainers as competition, because I don't, but I know I want to win, right? Or for me, winning in business is being the best, being successful. Success can take on different, you know, definitions, but you know, I know the lifestyle that I want to have, and I'm going to put the work in to attain that lifestyle. And when that starts to come to fruition, when I start to actually, you know, when the business grows, when the clientele grows, now I'm getting better athletes in and guys that, you know, are going to end up being pros. And, you know, now I can't forget, like, you know, little Susie or little Sally or little Johnny that are third grade still, you know, learning the game. I still love them too. And I'm still going to serve them to the best of my ability. But we start taking on all these different roles and responsibilities. And it's like, it's a blessing. And like I said, I'm grateful for it. But a lot of times I didn't get into this to run a business, but now I'm like, I'm trying to run a business to the best of my ability. And it's a lot of times, you know, my back is against the wall, or I'm thinking on the top of my feet, or now I have to delegate responsibilities. And now I have people like thinking I'm worried about them thinking that I'm lazy because I'm delegating responsibilities. Right. But oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, sure. But why are you asking me to do it? Well, do you want to see what I do on a given day? Like, do you know what time I wake? Right. You know, like, I can make a list if you want, right?
Man, I feel that for sure. Right. Like,
but I always try to be, you know, a couple steps ahead, and I already, you know, I know how things can be perceived, and I even get ahead of that. My employees, my wife runs the business. She does all the billing, all the memberships. She deals with all the customer relationships. Mm-hmm. God bless us. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yep. You know, yeah. It's not easy, but it comes back to, I wouldn't want it any other way. You know, if I had somebody, you know, now I got Alex in here with me. I've told him since day one, I'm never scared of him outshining me. If he does and he wants to go do his own thing, that means I didn't do a good enough job allowing him to carve his own niche under,
High Power or whatever our brand is, right? And I want to create an atmosphere that he never wants to leave. And that puts a ton of pressure on me as a man, as a trainer, as a whatever, you know? And so far he's been here 2 years, and I mean, he hasn't complained. Yeah. He hasn't complained to me much.
We're good for now.
Yeah, man. I totally understand that. Like, just with this merger that we kind of went through. Yeah. Like, I have a staff now and it's awesome. And, you know, it was perfect because I ended up hiring my last two interns, which it really worked out, but now they're not interns. You know what I'm saying? Like, now they're working for money, and mm-hmm. and now they're in charge of people's, you know, training and this and that. And we have, you know, front desk people that are, they do what they do. We have field space rental people that they do what they do. We have skill development people. They do what they do. But like, you're still the owner of the business. You oversee it all, mm-hmm. but now I can kind of, and we talked about this a lot, we can put people in positions for them to win as professionals, and for you to now allocate your time to whether, you know, something that you maybe wouldn't have had time for, whether it's family time, whether
fishing,
it's fishing,
snowboarding,
boxing job. Like, I'm on staff right now at my old high school that I played at.
Yeah. It's
phenomenal. And I probably should have done it years ago, but I just didn't have time.
What time is it? We got practice in an hour for eighth grade suburban travel team. And that's fun. See? For me. Like, that's my version of fun. Like, that's taking, you know, it's more time in the gym, but that's what I know I'm doing, what I'm supposed to be doing when I'm excited about coaching these eighth grade, you know, white suburban kids. And
dude, I'm so excited. Being on staff is, man, it's so exciting. We had film this morning. We had film and then lift, then practice. And I'm like, damn, I love you guys. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? They were all tired. It was 7:30 in the morning. And I was so excited to be there.
So you work with a lot of basketball players. You played ball, you know, growing up and in high school and stuff. I'm just going to keep the, I hate generic lazy questions, but I'm going to ask you a generic lazy question. What do basketball athletes need? If you had a concoction or a recipe, what do basketball athletes need?
Man, you know what's funny is that that's not even a generic and lazy question, because I feel like the generic and lazy answer would be like strength and stability. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, sure, they need that. But doesn't a baseball player need that? Doesn't a football player need
that? So what do basketball players need?
What do basketball players need? I personally think basketball players need exposure to quality movement. And what I mean by that is just things that don't necessarily always look like basketball could benefit them a lot. And whether it's in the weight room, whether they're a two-sport athlete, whether they're, you know, working on some mobility stuff, you know, maybe it's unilateral squat variations over a barbell back squat. Like, I think basketball players have a reputation for not enjoying the weight room for whatever reason. I don't know. Mine seem to, but like, that seems to be like a thought that basketball players.
I'm going to stop you there because they don't like their previous experience and what they think the weight room is like. Weight room is fun. My weight room is competitive. Sometimes I have them doing cartwheels and somersaults and walking on a rope because I know myself. I'm a hooper. I love basketball, but unless I can get bored in a weight room really quick. So I need some things that, you know, stimulate me. I need some things that get that competitive side out of me. So now my kids that have now bought into the system and now I've, you know, we've gotten a reputation or whatever, they look forward to lifting because it's awesome. And they get better. They jump higher. They put on some weight. We track progress. I read books on training, go figure, you know, and, you know, before we train anybody, I'm testing their vertical jump. I'm testing, a whole bunch of different things, but then I'm showing them improvement. We track their weight. Kid comes in, says, I want to gain 20 pounds. And in a year he gains 15 pounds And he's like, oh, this works. Okay, let's work out, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's that. You just nailed it. Like, exactly what I mean. Like, yeah, we know what they need. Like, the demands, you got to meet the demands of the sport and all that shit. But, like, they just need to enjoy it. And they need to be exposed to a lot of different movement patterns and a lot of different things that don't necessarily involve a ball or involve a, you know, single leg takeoff. So, and there is definitely a time and place for that. But, you know, the whole barbell back squat, bench press, deadlift, like until you're dead thing, I don't think really is for them.
No, they have so much variability in their sport. So what I look at, like I asked you the question, I already have the answer in my head anyway. I wanted to see what yours was. I ask a lot of people this question, but if I'm going to get to the bottom of what a basketball player needs, I need to look at what they're already getting, right? So rather than giving them more of what they're already getting, I'm going to go through the typical week of let's say I'm dealing with a high school basketball player. What does a typical week look like of a high school basketball player from Monday to Sunday? What are they doing? How much are they playing? How much sleep are they getting? What's their diet look? I mean, I want to know everything. And this gets back to earlier in our conversation, asking them questions and learning about them. The more I learn about them, the more I can help them. So because I do this strategically, right? It doesn't seem like that because it's just now built into my nature, right? Mm-hmm. And I find out what they're doing on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, how many games they're playing over the weekend, what other trainers they're seeing, what other inputs and stressors that they're putting on their body. I have, you know, deducted into my training program what they're not getting, right? Maybe a kid comes in on a Friday. I talk to Alex here all the time about it. On a Friday after now, I mean, school's all over the place now, but typically on a Friday, they're coming in and they're freaking going nuts for the weekend. They're thinking about the party tonight and what they got over the week. So I get them in the first 15 minutes, we might just lay down and breathe because I know they're crazy on Fridays. Right. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday morning, it could be a completely different energy. And that's just day to day. That's not even looking at the amount of, that's just like the energy in the room and being able to gauge that and kind of switch and auto-regulate what we're doing on the fly. But then even looking at their sport, the amount of jumping, everything we do in basketball is jumping, whether it's a Euro step, a jump shot, a dunk, then we get into change of direction, the amount of different, whatever. Now they're playing 7 games in 2 days, right? On the weekend AAU tournaments, right? So does it make sense to get them in and jump them more? Does it make sense to strap them to a Vertimax all the time? Not that we can't do some jumping and clean up technique and all that, don't get me wrong, but what will best serve them? What can we do to create more tolerance in their tissues, more tolerance in their soul, more tolerance in their bodies? What can we do to build them up and put armor on them, you know? Yep. And that's what I look at. So I look at their week. This is what they get. This is the amount of stress they're getting. This is what they eat. This is how much they sleep. And I make it really simple. I make a list of everything they do. And then now I need to look at the other list of what we can give them that they're not getting that I think they need. And that constantly changes. If you look at what I was doing 5 years ago, it's different than what I'm doing today because I learn more. I ask more questions. I talk to more people like you. And this needs to be done. And this is not done. The basketball population is severely underserved because you get ex-players or you get guys that played 30 years ago thinking they know what they're talking about, but the game is not the same game we played 30 years ago. The game has evolved. The training needs to evolve with it. Oh, and for sure. And guys like you know that. So in a weight room standpoint, my stuff is basic and I see what you're doing. You got single leg, you know, lunge variations, split squats. I see you messing with some tempo work and, you know, getting a little triphasic maybe with, you know, some eccentric stuff. You're going to build tissue capacity. All that kind of stuff is exactly right, but it's nothing crazy. Like you could read, you know, Dan John's Easy Strength. You could read Dietz's, you know, triphasic, or you could get whatever, go take an FRC course or PRI course and, you know, be better than anybody. But it doesn't take much for any skill trainer to have some competency of how to develop the human body. You could go read Easy Strength and you would be 99% ahead of every other skills trainer out there, right? Or if you're a strength trainer, stop thinking you know everything and understand you don't, and ask people questions. And when you don't know something, say, I don't know. It's not a big deal. It's okay.
Yeah, my programs are really simple. Like, they're super simple. We, like you said, we do pretty much is laid out. Like there's two main movements of that day. We split things up, push and pull most of the time, depending on what the scenario is. But, you know, it's some kind of core movement, like a compound movement, like a reverse lunge or something like that. And then if it's a push day, then yeah, we might dumbbell bench or do some kind of Swiss bar variation. And then everything else is kind of exploratory. Like some of it's standard, like we might do dead bugs, but maybe I'll throw a weight in their hand and maybe we'll do dead bugs with a weight, or maybe I'll throw a band hanging off something. And so it's pulling them laterally. And then we do dead bugs like that. So it's like the core, it's just basics. And then if I want to spice it up that day, I might. And like, we use a little bit of, I use some VBT just to track bar speed. Like if that's our intention, like if I want guys moving weight fast, then I will track that. And, but still that's not advanced. I don't think you don't even,
it's not.
You don't need a device. I personally love my device, but you don't need one. You can just say, hey, you got 5 seconds to get as many reps with this bench press as you can.
There needs to be a clear distinction, one, between auto-regulation and just throwing random crap at athletes. And that's like, it might look the same to somebody that doesn't know anything. And that's kind of an issue, right? Because normal, you know, the normal high school basketball player, the normal high school basketball player's parent can look at somebody throwing random drills and workouts at somebody and maybe what I do and what you do and say, that kind of looks the same, but yeah. It couldn't be completely different.
Right. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I put so much thought into my programs and like,
yes,
getting things like really, really finer details where we might want a certain shin angle on an exercise or, but I'm never going to ever try to pretend like my program is quote unquote sport specific. Like keep the sport, let them practice dunks, let them practice crossovers, let them mm-hmm. practice their snatchbacks, side steps, the skills of their sport. Like I'm never going to mimic any of that in the weight room. And I don't really, I personally don't think it's that useful. Like if you want somebody to get a better side step, they're going to have to practice their side step. If you want somebody to improve the capacity of which they can create separation, okay, yeah, maybe we should work on some lateral strength, lateral power, but that doesn't have to look like a side step in the weight room.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You can get it from a lateral lunge, from bounding. You can get it from crossover runs. Like none of that looks like basketball, but it translates. And then if they're working on that skill on the court, it'll come together.
Of course.
Justin, we talked about the like implementing triphasic stuff, eccentric and isometric work. Yeah. And I was just scrolling through your page yesterday and I saw you using some eccentric stuff, but not at like maximal loads. Like I think you had somebody doing like a single arm row on the cable. And I think in your caption you just said like implementing eccentrics at an intensity where they're capable of handling the concentric portion as well.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you implement them and what are you trying to accomplish? How often are you using that type of tempo work?
So there's two different ways. Like that post in particular, I was kind of annoyed that day because like a bunch of people were talking about like eccentric overload
mm-hmm.
and like they're doing it, but it's just like, it's just tempo work. Like eccentric overload means you are doing something heavy enough to where, yeah, you can control it eccentrically, but you cannot push it back up
concentrically. Right.
That would be overload.
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular post, I was controlling the weight. We have a Kaiser. So basically I was making it so heavy that he couldn't row it. But as I was increasing the weight, it was kind of pulling him in that eccentric phase. But if he were to try to row that, it would have been way too heavy. So I wanted to just get a lot of that day. We were just going for some eccentric overload. And that was just like a rant that I wanted to go on as far as like the difference between tempo work and eccentric overload. In that case, we were doing, like I said, just trying to trying to load up that eccentric phase as much as we could and really build some strength, build some muscle during this phase of that dude's program. On the other hand, tempo work, I don't necessarily think really has to be like traditionally periodized, if that's even a word. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think the linear periodization model is kind of like dead now because there is no real true off season, especially in basketball. Like, find me 3 months where they're not playing basketball, where I'm supposed to be like, hey, for the next 4 weeks, we're going to build hypertrophy and strength. And then next 4 weeks after that, we're going to work on power. And then after that, we're going to work on like peaking, like that. They're playing through all that. What? So exactly. So they're playing AAU through all that, or they're playing.
We need them to be peaking 365 at this point. Yeah, like I need them feeling good 365 days a year. You know, and even the different phase. I mean, to make it simple, that would fit in that. I'm doing, you know, capacity, you know, aerobic capacity, capillary density, and, you know, normal strength training 365 days a year with them. Do we throw in some power stuff? Yeah, when we dunk, you know, like, right. Yeah, every day they do. They jumped 400 times yesterday in their scrimmage. Like, so, you know.
That going back to the tempo work, like a lot of times we'll do tempo work, like you said, to improve that tissue capacity, or sometimes to, as a, like a pain management, pain alleviation. Like if dudes are just banged up, sore as hell from hooping.
Yeah. Or even ISOs. You know, oh, you can't do anything today? Well, you know, you're gonna hold a split, or you're gonna hold an ISO lunch for 5 minutes. Have fun.
Yeah, most of the time, that's what we're, like, at this point right now, I've got like a couple pros, like 4 or 5 pros that didn't get picked up, or, you know, their overseas seasons got canceled, or they're waiting on the G League to figure out what the fuck they're doing. And it's like, what am I, like, we can't just, we have to stay ready, but also you have to hoop a lot because you might, sorry, I'm sorry if you can hear my dog
it's barking. Okay. It sounds like a little dog.
Yeah, he's a little something. So it's like the program is interesting because they're hooping this whole time. And that's miles on the body, and they might be sore, and I'm supposed to like punish them more. Like, that's what I'm using a lot of my tempo and isometric work right now for, because it makes them feel better.
I got my guy stuck in that moment. Guy that's in the G League right now, you know, overseas, whatever. And, you know, I asked him literally 7 days ago, so when are you leaving? He goes, I think I got a couple months. He gets called by like some Team USA thing, and now he's out in, where is he?
He's in Indiana.
He's in Indiana with the team. They called like 14 G League guys, and they're you know, trying to qualify for FIBA or whatever. Like, and he leaves the next day. You know, we got a couple months, and then he leaves. And he's 10 pounds heavier than he should be, or 15. I'm like, oh crap. You know,
that goes back to what you said, man. You're always peaking. Like, you can't like spend the first 4 weeks of a program like completely dedicating that to like hypertrophy and strength, because if they get called, like, they have to go perform.
So last question. So we kind of focused mostly on, I guess, you know, high school youth athletes and what they want and what we think they need. How does your training differ when you're getting one of these pro guys or Lance Stevenson walks in the gym? How does, do you approach them differently? Is it the same? Is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's a little bit of both. Like, I have, like I said, you want to create a relationship with them. So you have to figure out, you know, what have you done in the past? What do you like? What do you hate? You know, the training is not super different.
The approach is the same. The outcome might be a little bit different based on, because he's got more. So the questions, right? It's the same line of questioning. You know, what have you done before you got here? What does your life look like? What are your past traumas? What are your past experiences? Yeah, and that's exactly what I would say. I'm going to train. I don't care if it's a sixth grade girl or an NBA Hall of Famer. My line of questioning and my, you know, my first session is going to be gathering data, information.
Yeah, it has to be, because, you know, otherwise it's like, you know, it's like you're just guessing. And on the fly. And I just don't think, especially with the pro athlete, that you can afford to guess. You really want to be as detailed as possible with all your athletes. But when there's millions of dollars on the line, it definitely ups the ante. And, you know, I think the, you know, with youth, I think the focus is not so much performance at that level. It's, you know, creating habits, developing foundational movement patterns, developing just an understanding of, hey, what are the benefits of doing this? Like, what am I getting out of this? And as they grow, then you become a little bit more performance oriented. But, you know, a high school kid, if you can get them in the weight room 3 times a week, you know, that's a freaking win. That's [S2] Yes. [S1] A win, because he's going to learn. And again, like training with guys like you, they're going to enjoy the process. And a pro might have been through high level college program, might have hated it, might have been the 3 or 4 NBA teams, might have had favorite strength coaches. Like, you need to know all that.
Yeah, you got me thinking. I'm going to cut you off one more time. It's like, when I first started, I would have been so strict with my testing process, my movement screens and all this stuff. And I wouldn't have let somebody jump in my weight room until I dotted, you know, every I and crossed every, what do we cross, X's?
T's.
We cross T's. All right. I dot I's and I cross T, right? And I wouldn't let whoever it is into my weight room until we did everything, right? And I probably lost so many people because of that.
Bro, don't even give me,
you know, so now somebody calls in, I've got the reputation that, like, I don't need to sell anymore. I've got a reputation in, you know, where we are. And they come in, just jump in a workout, meet me, meet the kids that are here, see the energy, feel it. If you like it, we'll get the testing done hopefully next time, but it might be the time after that. But let's just get you in here. It's not that serious, even though it is really serious. Man, you know,
I have a funny story like that just kind of reminded me. Like, I got this dude, his name's Darius Adams. He's a baller, man, straight baller. He's 2-time MVP of the
CBA. Are there any guys named Darius that aren't ballers?
No, there's none.
If your name is Darius, you can hoop.
You are balling. So he's CBA MVP champion. Like, he's killing it in China. And I got him in, like, we just connected. You know what I mean? It was just like, great fit. I love it. He goes to leave for China. And I'm like, yeah, we got to do your exit testing. Like, we want to see progress. And I go in the computer and my dumbass never assessed him. Like, I never did an assessment on him. And, like, guess what? It didn't ruin our training program.
No, you're the worst trainer of all time. How could you?
Alter anything. He got great results because he told me he felt great. And, like, obviously, we track lifting and stuff like that. Numbers went up, but his body felt better than it has in his last 10 years of being a pro athlete. He gets to China. His coaches are hype about the shape he's in and stuff like that. And, like, I'm like, from a business perspective and marketing, it's like, damn, that would have been cool to promote. But at the same time, it didn't really ruin his program. I don't want to make a habit out of it.
No, and I – honestly,
it worked out.
That story ties us back in full circle, right, to what we started with about there's so much that we do that is measured, that is data driven, that is research based, but there is something that the great coaches have that can just see it. Can be, you know, we've got a lens of, you know, thousands of athletes at this point that, you know, we can see progress without measuring it. We can feel progress without measuring it. So I think that's an unbelievable place to wrap up. I'd like to just ask you, where can people find you? Any quick, you know, drops of wisdom you want to leave us or anything like that? But that's it.
For sure, man. Well, first of all, I appreciate it. I haven't been on a podcast in a minute, so it was fun to get on here and just rant and ramble. So I'm glad y'all got me on here. If you guys want to connect, Justin Ochoa 317 is pretty much my social media handle on everything. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever.
TikTok.
Platforms.
You're on the TikTok?
I have a TikTok, but I don't do anything.
It's dangerous. You're good. You don't need it. You're fine.
So reach out. Like, again, like, we didn't really go into X's and O's of training, and I don't really care to, but if you guys want to ever talk training, hit me in the DM. I've been talking to Bobby like all day, every day about training for the last 3 weeks. So that's definitely something I'm passionate about, but I definitely like the people part of it. And I really think, like, we kind of opened up with that's the thing. And that's what I think more people need to get into and really dive into perfecting that part of their craft. But yeah, man, this was awesome. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I think we went a full hour without bashing any other trainers or, you know, training tools or anything. So I'm pretty proud of myself. Great job.
Yeah. You guys did great.
I'm really stoked about that.
Yeah. So we're just going to end before I start doing it. Peace.
Justin, thanks a lot, man.
All right, Alex.